Your name?
David Rovics.
And what brings you to D.C.?
I'm here mainly to attend the vigil and to sing at the rally and stuff around Bradley Manning's pretrial hearing at Fort Meade in Maryland. And then I added on to the plan two gigs in D.C. at the two different Occupies to sing at them.
Tonight you performed here at Freedom Plaza?
Yeah, and tomorrow I'll be playing at McPherson Square.
Tomorrow Bradley Manning turns 24 years old. Talk about his situation.
Oh, he's one of the most heroic figures of our times, I think. What he did was, with taking those hundreds of thousands of files that thoroughly document the terrible things that our government and many other governments have done and continue to do to subvert democracy and freedom of expression and freedom of assembly and all sorts of other things around the world. Getting these documents out into the public was an absolutely heroic thing to do, and he's paying the price for it by the government trying to put him away for life or maybe even worse. And he needs to be defended and supported and seen as the hero that he is. I mean, he is the Daniel Ellsberg of our time, and as Daniel Ellsberg himself says. And he needs and deserves all the support that Daniel Ellsberg had, which is why Daniel Ellsberg is not in prison and never went to prison, because he had support.
You've written a song about Bradley Manning. Did you perform that today outside Fort Meade?
Today it was just a vigil, so I wasn't singing. I'll be singing tomorrow at the rally. We're going to have a sound system, and I'll be performing tomorrow at that. And I will certainly sing the song for Bradley Manning.
Private Manning was an analyst. If what they say is true, he was paid to read reports, find the patterns sifting through. As he read the data, the patterns did emerge, patterns that were clear both before and since the surge. Patterns of abuse of the most horrific kind, gunning down civilians out of view and out of mind. Gunning down the opposition in the middle of the night, sending off the scholars to be tortured out of sight. Sometimes you need desperate measures when you live in desperate times. Private Manning's all he was, looking at war crimes. He wondered what to do to allow the dead to speak. He finally decided to contact WikiLeaks. Now it's all out on the table, and everybody knows the emperor is naked, he's not wearing any clothes. Stabbed Bradley in the back, called the cops and turned him in. But not before the soldier took half a million files. If you printed all the pages, they'd stretch on for miles. Evidence against the state, right from the horse's mouth. Machinations in the west, bombings in the south. A treasure trove of details for all the globe to see. How much they need to lie and kill for democracy. Villages, leaving everyone to die. They blamed on someone else, the official line, not I. How many coups have been plotted by ambassadors who say that free and fair elections be the order of the day? Now it's all out on the table, and everybody knows the emperor is naked, he's not wearing any clothes. Stop it from illuminating everything we lack, such as the rule of law or playing by the book. Look, you can read it, it's right here. The ship of state is run by crooks, and they vilify the messengers, call them every name for were daring to blow the whistle on the nature of their game, the game of taking lives and endangering the rest, in order for the wealthy few to do what they do best, dominate the world for the corporate elite. But now their cover's blown from their head down to their feet, and now the Stars and Stripes is looking much more like a rag. The lid is off the box, the cat's out of the bag. Now it's all out on the table, and everybody knows the Emperor is naked, he's not wearing any clothes. It's all out on the table, and everybody knows the Emperor is naked, he's not wearing any clothes.
Talk about his detainment. He's now being tried, but he's been held in solitary confinement. It seems a backwards process, the punishment before even so much as a trial.
Yeah, 18 months of detention with no charges, nothing. It's I wish I could say it's unprecedented, but it's not unprecedented. It's just part of the operations of this government, which doesn't actually abide by the Bill of Rights. I mean, the Bill of Rights was a very important document, and still is great on paper. But the fact is, it's never really been enforced. It's always been selectively enforced. And here, our right, which is enshrined in those first 10 amendments to our Constitution, the right to a speedy trial, and the right to freedom of expression. I mean, but in this case, and particularly the right to a speedy trial, is certainly not being heeded. And also the right to a fair trial. Well, it's impossible for him to get a fair trial. He's already been found guilty by nobody less prominent than the President of the United States. He's been already referred to as a criminal by Barack Obama, and of course by most other prominent politicians of both parties.
You're performing tonight. You performed at Occupy DC at Freedom Plaza, tomorrow night at McPherson Square. You've written a song about the Occupy movement. Have you been performing at them throughout the country as you travel it?
Yeah, throughout the U.S. and Canada. I've visited more than 24 Occupies and sung at most of them. And I've been singing that song at all of them since I wrote it, which was around October 8th. And of course, it's gone over, really well. It does what a song is hopefully, supposed to do, which when you're writing a topical song, which is to express what everybody is thinking, in a succinct musical format, And when you do that, you can see the looks on the faces of the people who are listening. They're like, you nailed it, And that's, I'm tooting my own horn here, but that is definitely what you're trying to do when you write a song like that. And I think I've more or less succeeded in that song.
Because this is where they buy the politicians. Because this is where power has its seat. Because 99% of us are suffering at the mercy of the madmen on this street. Because all of us are victims of class warfare being waged on us by the 1%. Because these greedy banksters rob the country, leaving us without the means to pay the rent. Because the last time that we had a decent government was about 1932. Because we the people are supposed to run this country, but instead it's all run by and for the few. Because now we know the rich do not pay taxes, but when they need a hand, it's us who bail them out. Because we suspected we lived in a plutocracy, but suddenly of late there is no doubt. So we're gonna stay right here. We're gonna stay right here. Because both my parents lost their savings. Because I have never opened an account. because the interest on my credit card just doubled, and now I can't pay the minimum amount. Because these budget cuts are just immoral, with our schools as overcrowded as they are. Because there are no buses where I live, but I can't afford to drive a car. Because so many of us don't have health insurance, the rest of us have it, but it sucks. Because the rich are flying in their private jets, while the rest of us are slogging through the muck. Because capitalism isn't working, this system has just failed to produce. Because the 1% are prospering, while the rest of us just suffer their abuse. So we're gonna stay right here. We're gonna stay right here. Because it has been demonstrated amply that the winners are the ones who stick around. Because this world should belong to everyone, not just the banksters who had smashed it to the ground. Because we've noticed voting doesn't change things when the politicians are mostly millionaires. Because we're learning how to stand up like Tunisians, like they did in Tahrir Square. Very young men named Mohammed, who was easy, struck a match that lit up all the earth. And all around the world the spell was broken, and a movement for the future was in birth. Because there's only so much the rich can feed us before we figure out which side we're on. Because we've learned if we want our liberation, it will only come if we stay here till the rising of the dawn. So we're gonna stay right here. We're gonna stay right here. Because corporations are not people, and we can't just let them choose. Because if we leave our fate to them, then all of us will surely lose. Because the climate clock is ticking, and we can't just leave our world behind. Because corporate rule isn't working, and it's time for humans' hearts and minds. Because you can't take it with you, because the rich just do not care. Because it doesn't matter how much you make, but how much you can share. Because these moments don't come often, because we want truly to be free. Because we know what really matters, something called society. So we're gonna stay right here. We're gonna stay right here. We're gonna stay.
What are your thoughts on the Occupy movement?
Well, I think it's the most important thing to happen here in this country in a long time, and it's you know, very much has its roots in Tunisia and the rebellions throughout the Arab world. Strategically, I mean, the goals you know, may be different, but the basic strategy of taking and holding space until you get your demands met is a great strategy, and it's not a new strategy, but it's been demonstrated very eloquently throughout the Arab world to be a very effective strategy. And And it's just great that there's something happening throughout the country, and it's really the first time in at least 11 years where there's been a sense of a some kind of a growing national movement. You know, maybe it took 9/11 and the financial collapse and a lot of other things. It took a while for that kind of anti-capitalist movement that was starting to form around 10, 11 years ago to sort of come back in a different form. But I think that's kind of more or less what we're witnessing, and it's come back in a form that seems to have somehow learned from the mistakes of the movement from 10 or 11 years ago, even without necessarily so many of the people consciously having learned from it. And, you know, part of it is the mass character of the movement. It's not a little insular movement of people who have all read Noam Chomsky and listened to the Dead Kennedys. It's a much more broad-based movement than that was, and it seems to, you know, the vast majority of the participants seem to really viscerally or maybe, you know, intellectually as well, understand that the tactic of taking and holding space and doing it all nonviolently, you know, nonviolent direct action is the tactic that they've embraced, and they have been pretty consistently rejecting other tactics, which I think is a brilliant move. Not only rejecting tactics like trashing and rioting, but rejecting tactics like voting. Not necessarily, you know, saying nobody should vote, but, you know, rejecting being the sort of, you know, direct action arm of the Democratic Party. I mean, I think there have been some people in the Democratic Party who have been hoping to woo the movement in their direction, and they failed, and that's great. And also people advocating violence have also failed in pulling the movement in that direction. Not that they've tried very hard, but which is good. But you know, I think the character of the movement is really on, you know, spot on, and I don't know where it's going. I don't think anybody knows where it's going because it's the nature of mass movements are, you know, fairly unpredictable. But but it seems to be moving in positive directions with the Occupy foreclosure thing happening. And I think whatever happens, I think people should not be too, put off by the possibility that numbers on the streets decrease during the coldest months of the year. There's precedent for that. I mean, that actually has a lot of precedent throughout the history of civilization, in terms of social movements, as well as military campaigns connected to guerrilla movements, which is also another kind of social movement. Obviously, you know, there is a lot of precedent for taking off the most inclement months because it's just either impossible. Yeah, it's just you can't. I mean, you can camp in the winter and you can advance in a battle while slogging through mud. I mean, these things can be done, but if you have the opportunity to call it off and say, okay, we'll wait when the ground is no longer made of mud, or we'll, you know, come back when it's no longer below freezing. You know, there's a lot of precedent for that. And you know, while it's very important for movements to have momentum, you know, and it's right for people to be concerned and to be concerned about maintaining momentum, that's very important. You can maintain a sort of ebbing and flowing momentum. It doesn't necessarily need to be this constant buildup, you know.
I was listening to Democracy Now! This morning, and Daniel Ellsberg was on, and I think he mentioned that this is maybe tomorrow is the one-year anniversary of, and I'm going to mess up his name if I tried, the individual who, you mentioned the roots of this Occupy movement being in Egypt and Tunisia, burning himself alive, the fruit vendor.
Yeah, Mohamed Bouazizi. Mm. Oh, yeah, and I mean, what he did and what, clearly it was the right time and place, and it inspired, I think, you know, Tunisia was, clearly a powder keg in terms of, like, you know, people living in pretty desperate economic conditions and under a corrupt dictatorship, which, thanks in part to WikiLeaks and Bradley Manning, people discovered that the dictatorship that they suspected was really corrupt was in fact really corrupt. And you know, people belittle that aspect of the thing to some extent, and I understand why, because of course, it's not about denying agency to the people of Tunisia. It's just about saying that, you know, there are outside influences outside Tunisia that had an impact, and WikiLeaks is one of them, I think, very clearly. But in any case, Mohamed Bouazizi, the way he did what he did, and the situation that he was in, and the conditions that the country was in, was clearly the move that was the move to make in terms of, you know, gathering together this movement. And it's very symbolic that he immolated himself in the small city that he did, which was not the capital of Tunisia, and it's been the hallmark of the entire rebellion throughout the Arab world, that they have all the movements in all throughout the Arab world have pretty much, I think, in all cases, started in the sort of secondary cities of those countries, and because they were happening in these cities that the outside world has often never heard of, that never gets international media, that these backwater kind of places like Sidi Bouzid and Alexandria, you know, because they started in these kinds of places, that inspired the movements in the capital cities. Because, you know, it's the same in the U.S. in capital cities like New York and San Francisco and D.C. People are aware that they live in some kind of a bubble, that, like, you know, you're not going to have a revolution if it's only happening in New York and San Francisco. It's got to happen, you know, it's got to be just as much part of the fabric of society in places like, you know, Cleveland and St. Louis and you know, Houston, you know, and you know, that's what's been happening both with the Arab rebellions as well as with the Occupy movement here.
This is going to seem a little out of left field. I asked my friend Burke Stansberry, who's the webmaster for The Fight Back and does so many things, that I was going to have a chance to interview you. And he said his son Lucas is one of his favorite songs, or the children's songs that you sing. And he asked, where does the family and singing to children fit into your politics?
Well, when I had a kid 6 years, or just under 6 years ago, that's what inspired me to start writing children's songs. But I was kind of writing them initially just because I was around kids a lot and was thinking more in terms of, like, how kids view the world, and writing from that perspective. And with kids songs, just like with adult songs, you can tell whether your perspective is right or not, whether you're really capturing what they're feeling, because if it really speaks to them, they respond, you know, just like adults do, you know. And you have to be able to read the responses, obviously. You know, you can't trust your friends who tell you, oh, that song's great, you know. That's not a response, that's what your friends are going to say, you know. But, you know, you can read the responses with kids are much more honest. If they like it, they're going to be spellbound, and if they don't like it, they're going to, you know, do something else. You know, they don't pay attention because they are supposed to. They only pay attention if they really like it, you know, basically. But you can talk about so many of the things, maybe not all of them, but so many of the things that you can talk about in songs for grown-ups, you can talk about in songs for kids. You just change the language and the examples, and you make it more accessible to a younger audience. But, you know, ideas of, like, the incredible importance of cooperation how to deal with problems like bullying, you know, just to take a couple of examples. Those are very much important themes for kids to understand and to talk about and to listen to and to, you know, internalize, just as they're important themes for adults. And, you know, kids and adults in different contexts all have huge problems with bullying. I mean, in the case of adults, it's more a societal bullying by the 1%, and with kids, it's a much more, you know, maybe direct kind of bullying in the playground. But, you know, we're all dealing with bullies, and we're all dealing with trying to figure out, you know, just how to cooperate with each other in order to deal with bullies. You know, it's just a matter of scale and stuff. But these messages are definitely important for kids to hear, and they, you know, and they respond to these messages too. They really like these messages.
Do you have a favorite children's song, or one that, as you're saying, you look out at the audience and the kids, that seems to resonate the most with them?
Well, if you're playing for kids who have left-wing parents, then Punk Rock Baby is the one that they totally respond to, because it speaks to them in a way that they generally have not heard, like, children's music speak to them. Like, but it's one of those songs where if you were not raised by left-wing parents, or at least parents that liked punk rock, or, you know, exposed you to punk rock as a kid, you know, then the song is maybe kind of fun, but doesn't really speak to them, you know. So it depends on the audience, really. But as which is true with most any song, it always depends on the audience.
When I came out of my mama, they cut my umbilical cord. I thought, hey man, what are you doing? And I let out a mighty roar. I got my first piercing when they stabbed me with a pin. The day that I was born, I got my first mohawk at the age of one. Stole my old man's razor, and then the job was done. I got a leather jacket at the age of two. Put spikes all over it with some super glue. I started scratching at my pants until they were all torn. I've been a punk rock baby since the day that I was born. I picked up my first electric guitar at the age of three. Turned the volume up just as high as it could be. I yelled into the mic about all the things I felt about this nasty world and the cards we all been dealt. About the toxic sludge that made me angry and forlorn. I've been a punk rock baby since the day that I was born. I dropped out of nursery school at the age of four. I said, hey, this place is boring, I am going out the door. I headed straight downtown, sat down in the park, met some other punks, stayed out till way past dark. Party till the dawn, came back home in the morn. I've been a punk rock baby since the day born. I moved into a squat at the age of five. Behind the barricades, I waited for the cops to arrive. I climbed onto the roof and said, here's where I'm gonna stay, and I'm gonna be a rebel until I'm old and gray. Between the toes of your estate, I'll always be a thorn. I've been a punk rock baby since the day.
The songs that are more political are going to work more or less well with kids depending on how politicized their upbringing has been. So songs like Bullies or the Pirate Song sometimes are really effective or not, or sometimes less effective depending on the kids. But songs about bodily functions are universal appeal, like my song Boogers, which is just about having lots of boogers and what you do with them, and my song about falling into the toilet. Those both have universal appeal among all 5-year-olds.
Well, I can definitely understand social movements having a little time off in the winter because it is getting cold out here. Thanks so much for your time, David Rovics. Any final thought that you care to share as we sit out here at Freedom Plaza, the occupation?
I'd say just, that savor the moment. There's something happening, and now is the time to get involved with it. And don't, you're going to really regret it, you listeners out there, if you don't plug into the movement while it's happening, because you don't know what the future holds. And, a friend of mine whose daughter I just found out recently was hit by a car and killed. She said to me, hug your daughter and tell her you love her now, because you might not be able to do it tomorrow. And, I think about that a lot about, of course, it's the worst thing that could happen. You never know when it's going to happen. Your kid dying or your close friend or relative or whoever. You got to live now. And the same is true of any social movement and is very much true about the Occupy movement. You don't know what the future holds. And, of course, hopefully it holds, years of a massively growing social movement. But whatever the future holds, each day is special. And don't put anything off, Live now.
Thanks so much for your time.
Yeah, thank you, Pete.